This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So as the actor who has two lines in this movie, Jeffrey Katzenberg has hired me to work for him, so I'm his employee now. And just want to welcome all of you to this conversation, and great to have everybody from Shrek the Final Chapter here. I'll sort of help moderate since I can't act all I was doing.
You're fantastic in the movie.
Pivotal.
Pivotal, yes.
One would say pivotal. Absolutely. Two lines of a pivotal. I guess we'll just start with the group, and maybe, Mike, you can start with the first question, and that is, looking back at all the years of the Shrek films, what's been one of your favorite moments throughout the past 10 years?
I think when Jeffrey said, would you like to be in an animated movie, I said yes. He said it was called Shrek. I said, that's the worst title I've ever heard in my life. And I didn't know what it was gonna be, and then in the process, the first time I saw it with an audience, and the line, but you are beautiful to me, got a gasp from the crowd who were so into the whole romance and the whole heart of it, that I just was blown away that that an animated movie could move people, and that it was something that people would be invested in emotionally. And I think that's been the most satisfying thing for me.
Eddie, what's been the secret to success for Shrek?
The secret to success?
For this franchise. Why has it been so successful, do you think?
I think it's really funny and very well made.
Hold on, I just went on for 15 minutes.
What's that?
Dang it, I wish I had done that.
I really do think it's that simple. It's really well made, and it's very funny, and it's smart, and those things add up to hits sometimes.
And Kevin, we talked about, when you were on Idol, the emotion in this one. It goes back to the roots of the beginning a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that since you get to see true love happen all over again for the first time between Shrek and Fiona, because they get to find one another. It's the moment that you're talking about, your favorite moment from the first movie, that you get to experience all over again, because we get to take the journey with them of finding that love again. It's not that you open up on the two of them sort of in routine of a life that they've taken for granted, or Shrek has for sure. And then you get to see him journey back through trying to regain and find his true love. And that ultimately is just a beautiful, lovely story, and you get to fall in love with Shrek and Fiona all over again.
Walt, how long did it take for you to come up with a devious voice of Rumpelstiltskin?
I think he's been inside me my whole life.
I feel like
as I was walking in here, I thought security was going to grab me and throw me out. we worked on the voice for a year, not knowing I would be cast, and then once I got cast, we started really trying to push it as best we can.
Antonio, how much fun have you had making these movies?
A lot, actually, and unexpected, because I came to this country without speaking the language. The fact that they copied this for the use of my voice was very, very surprising. Fun every time that I've been actually on recording sessions, and still do have a lot of fun. And also, you asked before about memories. I remember when we opened in the Cannes Film Festival that is happening right now, actually. And you see the whole entire intellectuality of Europe in a movie theater, interrupting the movie with applauses for 12 times. It was kind of stunning to me, beautiful moments that we've had in promotion all around the world, the whole entire team.
John, how did you get the role of Broken?
Wow.
A day job?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why the character I play on TV would necessarily lend itself to be the first choice to be an animated character. But I don't know. Honestly can't believe I'm sitting up here. When it came my way, and they were still kind of trying to figure out what it was going to be, and was it going to be a love interest or a rival or something, and we weren't really sure. And I was like, I don't care. I just want to be a part of this. I love this in the last three versions of this, and went and saw all of them in the theater like I was a 13-year-old. So I've just been the pure fan of me was like, I'll go play somebody who talks backwards on top of his head and turns around. I don't even care. And the fact that they were able to kind of work with me and my sort of personality and sort of create this person who's sort of this cheerleader of sorts was fun to do.
Craig, was playing Cookie fun for you?
Yes, playing a female ogre named Cookie.
they were
bit of a
Craig
stretch.
His
bit of a stretch.
So what?
Bit of a stretch.
A little bit. I mean, I think we all, have both sides, not just him, my feminine side. Just show up, and I didn't know I had an ogre side, so that kind of helped out. But it was a good time. We got in there with Mike Mitchell, who just kept developing, playing and playing. You know, she came out like, okay.
Obviously, you guys have plenty of questions and some very good ones, I'm sure, so we can open it up to the floor. Go ahead and raise your hand, we'll pass you a microphone. Sure.
Okay, I would like to ask Cameron and Mike, your characters are basically starting all over again from scratch, and I wonder how challenging that was, or how you came about working on that after all the years of playing them, knowing each other, being married, and having kids. Going back, what was that like?
The writing is so great, and just, all the filmmakers are so committed to it just being excellent that you're just kind of
following the script.
Yeah. Well, there's that. But, it's kind of like a Le Mans birth back into the thing every time, So, but
yeah, I agree. It's well structured and it's clear as to what the two of them are going through.
But you made it very fresh. I'm just wondering how you made it so fresh, like they just met this.
Mike Mitchell is a great director. And Jeffrey's a great filmmaker. And
the animators are wonderfully, they're great actors. They're really the actors, the animators who, put the looks in our eyes and the chemistry between us.
I have a question for Antonio. The ending of Shrek is the beginning of Boots with another movie. So how do you feel about that? And then for the cast, 10 years from now, would you do a Shrek final chapter 2?
Yeah. Sounds like he's auditioning.
Yeah. Antonio, I love the way that you talk.
You talk so very smooth. Not quite as smooth, but very smooth. You're like that bee in that commercial.
Sure, yeah.
It's amazing.
No, well, it's sad in one side. But very satisfying, because I think the four movies of Shrek actually sometimes even playing against pop culture became pop culture itself. That's what it is now. I mean, I was in New York this year watching the parade from my house of the Thanksgiving parade, and here it was, Shrek, a big balloon across the front of my window, and behind him was Mickey Mouse. So it's part of American pop culture right now. So I think it set up, it was beautiful, what he has done in these 10 years of work. So he's sad on one side. And the other side, yes, the character is going to continue now with his own saga, I hope, if it goes well. But it's totally different. What we're doing so far doesn't go in the same narrative process than that track. It goes in a different direction. It takes more from Sergio Leone, kind of 60s movies, Spaghetti Western. Yeah. And stuff like that. It's a lot of fun too, but it's in a different context.
And for the guys who do the final chapter 2 10 years from now?
I'm in.
The final chapter reunion movie? Can you believe there was a final chapter movie? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I just play the voice of Shrek.
It's easy because you don't have to. It's like if somebody asked me, are you getting Charlie's Angels from 10 years from now? I'd be like, what? a little bit different fitting in those pants 10 years ago, from 10 years ago, But, you know, the Shrek, of course, it's just we get to go back to whatever they will be 10 years from now. And hopefully we won't have to wait that long, Jeffrey Katzenberg.
For Cameron, I wanted to ask you, Fiona gets to be very empowered in this movie as a leader and a warrior and so forth. And I was just wondering for you, did you think that Fiona might have had a better life as a warrior without Shrek?
You know, for me, Fiona's always been a warrior. You know, I've always seen her as that. She's been a warrior of love her whole, you know, through all of these films. What she's worked for, what she's fought for, is the love that she has for herself and the love that she has for Shrek and her family and her friends. And so she's always been a warrior. It's just in a different tone for this film. And her responsibilities are a little bit more obvious as far as, you know, the resistance. But she's always been a warrior to me. And I think through that, her nature, that is part of her nature, and it has given her all the things in her life that she values.
This is for the entire panel. Both this film and Prince of Persia, there's something in the zeitgeist about being able to have a do-over to fix the mistakes once you have a better understanding of where you've come from and where you are now. Is there anything in any of the other three films that maybe the original cast played to do-over? And as a follow-up, are there any fairy tales from your childhood that you would like to get your hands on and rewrite?
I just want to say thank you for Zeitgeist. It's interesting. I always like a good Germanism. Gesundheit here.
But is there anything?
You mean in the leitmotif?
Yes.
Certain je ne sais quoi.
The idea of do-over. The idea that you can sort of rewrite your past or your future.
If I had known that Fiona's parents had both had British accents when I first did it, that they was Julie Andrews and John Cleese, I might have, you know. Because when I first started the movie, when I did my voice, I didn't know who was playing my parents. So it was sort of, you know, it was one of those things. I was like, wait a second, how come I sound like I'm from California?
And are there any films you guys would like to rewrite? Like, I want to know what Don Draper would rewrite. Come on.
I was just trying to figure out a way to use the word Schadenfreude.
Yes. Me too. Thank you.
Any fairy tales I would rewrite. I mean, I think the great thing about this franchise is that it takes the kind of classic fairy tale thing and puts it on its head. So this is a perfect example of it. And when the original book came out, and I may be getting my timeline wrong, there are quite a few books that were coming out that were sort of reworked and sort of twisted fairy tales that were taking the classic sort of damsel in distress and handsome prince and kind of putting them on their head or swapping roles and everything. So I think not only this franchise, but there have been several that have done that quite well. And then when you add in the unbelievable talent on the stage and the animators and all that stuff, it makes this incredible thing come to life. So I don't think I can certainly do it any better than this. This is amazing.
I will rewrite The Lion King. I wouldn't let Mufasa die.
Still works for you. I understand.
You better. You know, for 12 years, I found myself picking out little features of every character that I never really saw before. Was it the same for you when you were watching it? You saw a feature of your character and they said, oh wow, I never really noticed that. Was it always there, or a new discovery?
Well,
Antonio's got quite a lot of features that he didn't know he had.
We're going to talk about sex right now.
Oh, good. the abundancy of the weight of that. Puss in Boots carries in this movie is all in glory.
Very good.
There.
Even as a fat cat, he still manages to be sexy.
I know. It's
This question is for Mike. It's Pamela for the Toronto Star.
Oh, hello.
Hi. In the movie, you know, he just wants to get, he doesn't want the attention anymore. He wants to be able to do the things he used to enjoy without people watching. Is there a parallel, let's say, in your own life and the rise of your career to that moment that Shrek had where he just wanted to freak out and didn't freak out?
I do now live in a swamp. I like my privacy. I like to, when, like something like this, I love being part of this, and when I'm not doing stuff, I like to go away. I enjoy being a person a great deal.
Do you think being Canadian gives you a different sensibility at all about that stuff?
It's hard to be super full of yourself in Canada. You get, if there was a motto of Canada, it would be, who do you think you are, right? I think it's very good training to just be a person is growing up in Canada. It's a very, you know, there's people, you know, they say a lot of things about Canada, you know, that it's boring and stuff, but if you look around the world, I think in praise of boring, I think it's, you know, it's a very civilized place to grow up. I'm very proud of it.
This question's for John. How did you find the transition going from television to voice acting?
It was easier, a lot easier. Less demanded on me, and my role in the film isn't really as large as my role television show, so that was a lot easier as well. But a whole different kind of acting and of being in a scene when you're reading opposite people that have other constructed performances that you haven't necessarily heard. And that again speaks to the incredible competence of the people that put this together to make that all seem seamless. And I was learning as I went along. As who the character was and finding character and it was changing and it kept changing and it would go back in and kind of redo it and retweak it and the art involved with who this character was because it's a new character was constantly being shifted and there would be notes and maybe it's not this, maybe it's that. And that was a really fun process to be a part of because it's not happening kind of live, it's sort of deferred until they get it exactly right. And when you're in the hands of people that want it to be excellent, that's a very comforting and welcoming feeling. So I tremendously enjoyed it, and it was a really interesting thing to learn on the fly.
Cameron,
hi.
What about the Nation Network? So I know you're green, really, okay? So what is important to that? I don't know, early
Priyasa
Dasgupta, why is it important?
I think it should be, the word green is you know, it's a tag, some way to identify right. A certain mentality, obviously, but I think that it's important for everybody to be because we only have one planet, and we all have, no one can live without clean air, clean soil, or clean water. None of us can live without that period, no matter if it's clean or dirty, but it behooves all of us, every human being, it's the only thing 6.5 billion people share on this planet, is the planet, so I think it just makes sense to take care of your life force and the resources that sustain you.
Doobie Brothers ringtone? That's up 4 notches, the number 5 this week.
Everyone in the cast over here. I think you see this movie and it just makes you love life and love and happiness. Can you each talk about what you love about your life and what else makes you happy at this point in your life? And just one other question, what do you think young audiences will learn about love from watching this?
I
I love all the free time I have. And my body of work, in film just continues to grow. This is a giant leap from my cameo Knocked Up. So, Walt?
This is exactly what I was going to say.
but the unshaven version.
Really, I should have cleaned up a little.
You should have.
She's going to say it, dude.
I've got plenty of moisturizers in my room.
Now I've lost the question.
It's about love.
What are you happy
right?
about? What
are you happy about? I have a 7-year-old daughter that she needs everything.
What do I love about New York City?
I love New York City.
Did I get to that?
I love everything about it. I do.
I'm in love with New York City.
I'm in love with life. I think it's pretty awesome when it's when you're engaged in it. And I love my family and my friends, and that to me is the biggest, that's the wealth of my life is my friends and family and the experience that I get to share with them. And makes me puts a smile on my face and my heart, so.
I feel the same way you feel. I just love everything. I just love everyone. I love love.
Love.
Love is a motherfucking way. Yeah. How do you feel about love?
Does anybody not love love?
Love.
I have a love-hate relationship
with love.
Really?
You have a love-hate relationship?
Yes, of course I do.
Except
that's part of my shouting point. I think that is all.
Canadian, right?
It is, yeah. Yes.
Love, I would tell you that today, especially, I love the fact that I've been married for 14 years.
That's right, sure. Anniversary.
And really, what Cameron said is true. I think everybody has it, the same, everybody loves being with their family and you love being around people that, make you feel good. And, so all those things you said hit it right on for me. I don't want to say it again. Pretty much nailed it.
Feels good.
And to follow up, what do you think young audiences will learn about love?
Wait a second.
Well, it's hard to follow up everything. So I'll go to the second question. What will kids learn about this? I think that it's. We live in a moment in time right now where people have a lot of information about a lot of people kind of instantly, but it's all sort of surface information, and it doesn't really mean anything. And the things that people were talking about what they love and what they hold dear and what they really feel strongly about are things that are kind of unquantifiable and aren't on your Twitter feed or your Facebook page or your instant message thing or gossip columns or paparazzi photos or anything like that. It's truly getting to know people and understanding them and having a relationship with them and trusting them and being vulnerable and all that stuff. And I think that's kind of the journey that Trek makes, is sort of taking his existence for granted. And we're all incredibly fortunate people up here, and I love having the opportunity to do what I do and what I love to do. And the idea of taking that for granted and not sort of appreciating and not taking time out and not appreciating the ability to have to do that is similar to not appreciating the people that you share your life with or that you love. And that's what I think Shrek and Fiona go through and rediscover. And this is all very boring and academic, but that's what I think about it. And I think that's what really resonates with kids and why it appeals to not just little kids, but the kid and everybody else.
Moments in life. what I love about life, if you ever think about it, it's like, I was just thinking about the day of life, I made these moments and I flew to Chicago to surprise my mother at the church on Mother's Day. Mm. And it was, it was a nice moment, like being here right now with this panel was an amazing moment. For me, and my Kindle. And what kids are going to, like, one thing I saw in the Shrek was, well, there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, you sometimes you got to fight for what you believe in. I think that's a nice message to take with you.
My question for Eddie. This movie, I feel, Donkey has many singing sequence more than other movies.
He has more what?
Singing.
Oh, I sing more?
Do you feel a kind of different approach when you do the, don't you just do dialogue voiceover or singing? It's a little bit, which one is it, difficult? And we are told Donkey has a Christmas carol things.
He has a Christmas what?
Christmas carol.
Christmas carol. And I did a Christmas carol in the DVD special thing. It's not really in the movie. And it's not, it's all the same. The singing and doing the voiceover is pretty much it's the same, doing the same session, and it's kind of using the same muscle, I guess. Not really much of a difference from it. I think I answered your question. I hope I did.
Hi, my question is for Walter. When you were initially working on this and doing the voices, as you know, before you knew that ultimately your voice would be into it in the movie, how much of that at the back of your mind was you thinking, man, this would be really cool if it could be me doing the voice? And how much, because obviously you put a lot of work into it, so you know, even back then, were you thinking, you know, this could be me? And then my question for the rest of the cast members is, was any, you know, how surprised were you when it turned out that Walter was doing this
You know, I never thought that I would get cast, and I thought if I did, I'd have to do things like this, so I was freaked out. and you know, I never thought I would, but of course, you know, I would like to be part of this, like, amazing talent, so.
You already are part of the amazing talent. Walt did most of the voices.
Yeah.
For all of us, I think, yeah, and he's, I don't know how good of a Fiona he does, but.
Yeah. Pretty good. We shared some moments.
He's not as purdy as you.
You did have to say, there was a line where he said, just kiss me.
And what happened?
We kissed.
Okay.
We did, you know, come
just
on.
Just a pack.
You know. What about my accent? How do you do my accent?
Oh, that's
really good. Did you have an angry wig?
Angry wig in your voice? You know, actually, I did, you know, in Scratch, I played you a lot, so.
Do it.
Do that line, or do you?
Right now?
Feed me if you dare.
Now you know who does the Bumblebee commercial.
I'm going to use you, man.
But I was so happy when I heard it was him, because he's brilliant at it, and there really isn't any, you know, if somebody else came in and did it, I don't think it would have had the same resonance as Walt doing it. It's his character, you know.
I didn't realize he had done it until I saw the movie all cut together, and I was like, what the fuck is doing Rumpelstiltskin? I was blown away by it. I tripped out.
Really?
Yes, a question from Clown Weekly.
Hi, my name is Brian Burbank, Burbank Times. I am sitting here as a fellow, kind of baby boomerish thoughts come to my head. It's the same kind of cathartic final thing, maybe for a lot of this generation, hitting the Shrek moment in this film. Wondering if it's balancing between that and being a kid's film, and how you look at that when you hit that moment of non-appreciation, and what you would do with that, short of not being able to do your dream day, what you would do with that. And we all have that moment, right? So I was wondering what you'd do with that. Anyways.
I feel, when I was a kid in Toronto, I wanted to, you know, you have your nose against the window looking south to show business, Showbiznia, United States. And I kind of feel like
every day I get to do what I do, you were saying, definitely is kind of a dream day. So it's kind of an amazing thing. And honestly, I don't think anybody here, I think we're all kind of like unbelievably grateful and blown away at how well it's gone, to be honest. This whole thing, we all like it and we all wanted it to do well. And
do
so that's kind of like, this is a constant dream day. Do I see what?
Do you see it more like the adults or the messages towards the adults, where it's really a kid's film? Because that's not
I think that Shrek is a little bit like Flintstone's vitamins, you know? You're eating Barney and Dino and you don't need to know what's good for you. You know? It has built-in vitamins message. But the delivery system is very enjoyable. Would anyone like to hit me in the face right now? No?
No, it's true.
Okay. Thank you.
I think
I'll be here for a free hit.
I think it's for both adults and children. I think that you're never too young or too old to learn these lessons. I think that that's been the case through all the Shreks and why they've been so successful. You know, they're not just speaking to one audience; they're speaking to every. You know, it's anyone who watches it can walk away understanding exactly what Shrek and Fiona are going through, relevant to their own life. And I think that's.
It's about the balance of both things. There are obviously references to things that they have to do with people of our age that are right there in the movie. And I'm telling you that because I saw Shrek for the first time when I was not part of it. And I love that type of thing. And at the same time, that first time that I saw it, I was with my baby. And she took the whole entire story in a totally different way. She just loved the adventure, the plot of the story. But I could pick from there things that were straight lunch to me. And I think we kept going in that direction all through the four movies, all the time.
Question? Hey, up here on the left side, in the back. Hi. This question from Mike Cameron, Eddie Antonio. So many kids recognize the voices that you've put into Shrek over all these movies, and I wonder, I don't, not so much for Mike because of the Scottish thing, but do you often put them on for kids to get reactions? Do they beg you to? Do kids just come up to you when they hear you and recognize the voice without knowing who you are?
It's very
can
weird.
You talk about your relationship to the voice and the kids who love you?
It's very weird, right? Because, I mean, I remember a couple of times a woman came to me once in a supermarket with you know, a little kid who was like 5 years old, and she said to him, look, this is Puss in Boots. This is Puss in Boots, can you do the voice? And the kid just looked at me and looked at my mother and said, no, Puss in Boots, Mom. that's Zorro. What do you do in that circumstance? You know, you don't know what to do with the kid. You know, what voice are they going to put to him? And so, I don't know, it's weird. What about you, Eddie?
I've had people come up and do lines from the movie to me. They don't really ask me to do. The only time I'll do that voice of that donkey is I could do a shadow puppet of that donkey. So if I'm watching movies at home on the screen, and the movie's not good, I have the donkey come up and do commentary.
that's
great.
Almost.
Yeah. Move out of that spot. It's right behind you.
That'll be
the way. There you go. There it is. That's
like you do almost like he'd be like, this movie ain't shit.
Sometimes I take the Shrek ears, the little green ones, and I have this shadow of me and Shrek. And I've had some wild times in the house.
Yeah, I say as Antonio, nobody comes up and does Fiona's voice for me. No. But it's actually the same thing as Antonio. I've had parents come up and go, you know who this is? This is Princess Fiona. And kids are like, literally, tears, you know? And I always say, I tell people, no, I try to stop them before they tell them, because as a kid, you believe that the characters that you're watching, that you're, you know, you fall in, like, in love with them, and you want to believe that they're real. You don't want to believe that there's a human being behind it. And same way you want to believe in Santa Claus and, you know, the Easter Bunny. It's like you don't want that myth to be, you know, ruined and dispelled. So, you know, it is one of those things. I'm always like, please don't tell them. Don't let it be. Let Fiona exist as Fiona.
I've called kids that have the measles, like, or sick or whatever, and I'm always shocked by how incredibly accepting they are that Shrek is calling them. It's like, ah, Shrek, good. Anyways, isn't this a little extraordinary? So, and that's the part that always kills me. Like, can you put the tooth fairy on now? Yeah, I'll go get the tooth fairy.
Kind of wanted to go back a little on what you said earlier. On all of you, when have you, or when have a day like Shrek? Because I know, like Ryan, you don't have any free time.
I've got a girl, actually. Can you take over?
No. He can. So, if you can just kind of, all of you kind of talk a little bit about that.
Is it the same if I had a day to myself? Or
yeah.
It's crazy. It's like being on the sun up here. So I would want to be somewhere cool and dark. if I had a day to do anything I want, you know, what would I do? I've said this before when we were in Tribeca, and they hated this answer, but I said I would sleep all day.
That's a good answer.
We're going down. I think a day that I would want to do over again, differently, or just relive because it was a good day.
Both.
Okay. The day that I got called by Lorne Michaels to be on Saturday Night Live was a great day, and I remember just being like, "Woo! I love this. This is craziness." And that was just a magical, out of the blue call that I just couldn't believe. That would be my day.
I don't know, I've been thinking about this day that I was on the back of an elephant in Nepal riding bareback off of, like, towards the sun in full gallop with bare feet and, like, a tank top on, and it was a pretty awesome moment. And that was pretty awesome. I wouldn't mind going back there. It's pretty liberating. It's pretty freeing.
Yeah. My day sucked.
It's really fun. It's fun to have Lauren call you and say, "Hey." But
I was on the back of an elephant when he called.
No. I've had some good days. I can narrow it down to that one day.
I know, I'm
waiting to have that one day. I think I've had that one day where I was like, you know, this is the day. I haven't had that this is the day moment. I've had a lot of good times, a lot of good days. But not the day yet. Sorry.
Get his number. Get his number, because when it happens, you can give him a call.
And call you and say, I had that day? Yeah.
You're pretty much here, you know, we all had beautiful days, but probably the day that I would like to have is the day that I didn't have yet, the one that is still to come.
That's
a good day.
That's what I said.
I'll take that. I think we should all just give that answer. That's everyone's answer.
Yeah, I'm not going to get any better than that, so I'm going to choose to be Lorne Michaels in Mike's day and the elephant in Cameron's day. And sleep the rest.
Last day.
Last Thursday or last night?
Last Thursday.
Oh, last Thursday.
I wanted to thank you for bringing Donkey up, because I have a question for you about him. A lot of times when we talk to actors about getting in touch with their character, it's a sense memory process that they go through. So I was wondering if you could channel your inner donkey right now and tell me how similar the two of you really are.
I mean, we...
I don't know if we're going to do that. I'd feel creepy if I started doing that. That's an easier question.
Hey, Eddie, do your donkey for us.
Was it easy for you to find him? And if it was, why was that?
I just do it. I don't, it's not, it's, I just do whenever I, whenever I'm on camera doing anything or on mic, it's, I don't have any process. I go do it and I just do it, and when I finish, it goes away. There's no process. I wish there was some technique to it, but I just turn it on and off. Then I go home.
Is that with all your characters?
With everything. With everything. Even this. Like when this is over, I'll just be gone.
Have seen the foreign version? Have you seen your characters speaking foreign language?
I haven't. So yes, I have. I've seen bits. I've seen like the first 3 minutes of probably Taiwanese, Japanese, Chinese, German, but only the first 3 minutes because you go in for the premiere and you stay for the first 3 minutes and then you leave because you have to go to the next country to promote it in the next country where you'll hear it for 3 minutes and then.
Antonio, do you get to do the Spanish version?
Yeah, I've seen it because I have to do it. I do the Spanish version in two different versions, actually, one for Castilian version for Spain and another one for Latin America, and then I do the Italian version too.
I do the Canadian version. Remarkably like the American one.
Yeah.